Okay, so I guess it's 1:30, a little after, we'll go ahead and get started. So I guess we can kind of pick up where we left off since we didn't quite finish everything from the first session. Did everybody get to the point where they have the training done and they can look at the GUI?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Not there. Okay, so let's go back to the GUI and take a look at what we have there. So I think we looked at most of sort of the standard plots you can look at for how you define your performance and what you get. But one of the things we didn't look at is an efficiency and actually putting in the normalization to calculate a curie. So there's this number 5A here, classifier cut efficiency in the GUI, and you can go there. And that gives you this sort of complicated plot that has lots of stuff on it, and unfortunately the labels for the
presence on my machine.
They're on yours? Okay, so maybe it's mine.
I got lucky.
Okay.
I quit the program and reran it. I don't know if that has anything to do with it at all.
So what they are is the... You're looking at the efficiencies are the efficiency and purity you're plotting here on the y-axis versus your classifier cut value. So if you put a cut at some point here, your background efficiency is this.
That's right.
Yeah, background efficiency is in red, and so when you move up to higher values of the cut, you have a lower background efficiency. So you're throwing away a lot of background in it. Signal efficiency, I guess, is this blue one.
Yep.
So down here at the low values, you keep pretty much everything and you start throwing things away up here. But in order to get a purity, which should be this curve, the purity should be the long dashed line. And so in order to get that, you need to put in a normalization for the signal in the background event. And the way you do that is with this little number of signal events and number of background events. So to start with, it just puts in 1,000 for each. But what you want to put in is the number of combinations you had before you started the decision tree training process. And so the log file that you saved when you ran this previously actually has that information in there. So if you go to this log file, I think it's called log training. You can go down to, it has some initializations and things, but at some point, make it a little bigger. You get a signal with a number of events that pass some pre-selection cuts and a background number of events that pass some pre-selection cuts. So this number, 19,244, uses the number of real signal from the signal tree that you're using in the training. And then for the background, you have this number of almost 100,000. So if you put these numbers into this little box up here for the signal event, so you get 19,244, and then 19,7944. It redraws these with the proper normalizations for your weight. So the red curve for The background efficiency and the blue curve, the signal efficiency don't change with your weight, but your purity now, which is your ratio of signal over signal plus background, this long dashed line, it does change from what it was previously. And so basically you can trace out, by just putting a cut at one value here, a purity for your signal and efficiency. So for the things we were looking at for the previous BDT studies, we were selecting something like a 90% purity. So you can see if you put a cut at about 0.1 for this classifier, you get a 90% purity and roughly 50% efficiency. So this efficiency is coming from, this is the efficiency of once you have a reconstructed combination, how many of those you actually select are actually passing this BDT cut. So it doesn't include your efficiencies for actually reconstructing the track and things like that. So this is a nice, quick, easy way to just look at a plot and say, you know, once I put in these normalizations, this is the efficiency in the background, or the purity that I can expect. Of course, we'll talk about how we can do something a little smarter, and you can actually use this the decision tree we trained to, you know, fill histograms after you apply this BDT cut on a separate sample, and you can look at efficiency versus mass, or efficiency versus, you know, cosine theta star, or whatever you want. But this is just sort of an integrated purity and efficiency you can get for your sample. Okay. So that was about all I wanted to show you from the GUI side of things. While we're in the log file, we'll go ahead and look at this variable ranking that we typically look at to see which variables are really contributing to our PDT performance. So if you just search in the log file for ranking, at some point you'll have, looks like what's on the screen here. So you have a factory with a ranking of the input variables, and then listed are all the variables that I've used in this BDT, and then they call the variable importance. So this is just, when you do this evaluate method at the end of your training macro, this is what it spits out. And so it's telling you which of the variables it's using most in the, or which of the variables are used in the most split, basically, in the training. So you can get a feel for what the variables are that are really important here. So I think some of these are pretty obvious. Like when we looked at the input variables, this missing neutron transverse momentum was peaked at zero for a lot of the background, but you had this larger value for the signal. Obviously, the kinematic fit figure of merit here is really critical. And then a lot of these other, this unused proton figure of merit. So this is in that loop where we were finding if there are any extra particle hypotheses in the event that looks like a proton, we know we want to throw that event away we should weight events like that or get rid of those if we can. And so that is ranked highly as well, because a lot of this background, like I said, is proton pi plus pi minus instead of the neutron recharge ion. And then, of course, all these timing and drift chamber DEDX are our PID information about the track, and they come in as well. So this is a good thing to look at after you do your training. You can come here and look and see, you know, are the variables that I think should be good discriminating variables really having the biggest impact on my training sample.
Did you add the extra accelerator energy?
I didn't add that one for this.
Okay.
So it should be in these unused hypotheses arrays.
Okay.
So I didn't do it here, but you could.
Yeah, because that was pretty powerful.
So that's sort of, at the end here, we'll add one more variable, just so you can see how that works. And then you can go back later and, you know, look at and, build a new variable, like the sum of the extra calorimeter energy, and add that to the tree and see what it does. Yeah, so this is not meant to be the best possible performance you can get from BET for this. Yeah. right. So that's the ranking. So we looked at the results of the training, but we haven't actually looked at the macro that does the training yet. So why don't we take a look at the macro that actually does the training is called Train N3Pi TMBA. I'm going to try to open that up here if I can get my Emacs to sit on the side of the screen. Right, so we looked at this sort of simple example before where you have four variables you read in straight from the tree without computing anything. For this case where what's stored in the tree is something like a chi-square and a number of degrees of freedom, we're going to do something a little more complicated, which is just computing the mass probability of that variable. In this case, there's some small fraction of events where those show up to be not a number, so we have just an extra condition there, but it's really just looking at the confidence level for each of those. So we have the one pi plus, two pi plus, and pi minus. You just have these PID variables from the timing information and the script chamber TDX. We have the kinematic fit, figure of merit, the primary vertex radius. So this is the kinematic fit position of the point where the three charged pions originated from, and so that's for some of the background where you have extraneous tracks, that tends to be a large value, so outside the target, this seems to get rid of some of that, and so on. And so this is just how you add these different variables that we looked at before that are in either the tree that we built or the friend tree. So that's how you define the variables. An important thing to note about the signal and the background, how you add those in here. So we have the two trees that are stored in this data folder. So we have the signal tree and the background VGGen tree. So the signal sample we want to use in our training is just coming from this signal root file. But there's also what I called combinatoric background before, but which is really just misreconstructed or extra track background, where you get a fake track which you match it to real track in the signal Monte Carlo sample. And that you want to include as background. So you can actually grab the same tree from that signal Monte Carlo file, but you want to, when you add that to your factory, you want to select only the events which are not, which are the common, what I'm calling the combinatoric background. So you can do that where you add the signal trees and the background trees. You can apply cuts on what you actually include in the training. So when you do this prepare training and test trees, you give a string for the cuts that you apply to the signal and the cuts that you apply to the background. So I define these my cuts and my cuts S and my cuts B for the two options. And the signal cut is that we have this true signal variable, which we define in the T selector. So for events from the signal Monte Carlo file, we want those to only be the events that really have the reconstructed tracks are matched to the thrown tracks with the right topology. And then the combinatoric background from that we want to actually include in the background sample for the train. And then for the BGGen Pythia sample, we want to only include in there events where this true signal variable is false. So we only want to include things where it's not the thrown true topology of the signal that we're looking for. So you have to be, you don't just want to write the signal file to, or use the signal file as the straight signal sample for your training, and the PISIA file for, without any tests, for the training for the background, because both of them contain signal and background. You have to separate those before you do the training process. Does that kind of make sense? Okay. And then after that, it's really just booking the method. Like we talked about before, you can choose some different parameters here for the number of cuts you use, the maximum depth you choose, and just, yeah, run the train. Okay, so with that, I think we'll go to, if you go back to the README file, there's an exercise number 5, and, or step number 5 to the exercise, which is to modify this macro train N3Pi TNVA that we were just looking at to add a new variable, which is the missing mass of, measured missing mass of the neutron. So I'd like you to do that and then try to run this training again and look at the GUI and see if you can see some changes, or you can look at, you know, write a new log file and look at what you get for the different performances and how the variables change. One thing to note is that in this train N3Pi TNVA, when you initialize this factory, you give it what I call a base name, which is the name of the root file that it writes out and the weights file that it writes out. So you want to change that to something different than what's in there for as default for now, so it doesn't write over the previous trees you had, or the root file you had before.
That's the name of the variable right there.
Yeah, if you look in the T selector, it's defined there, but that's the name that's in the README file is what you want to add. No, the adding the variables is not important. It has no impact on how they're used. This is a friend tree that you wrote for. Yeah. So it's another one of those variables that's not included in the analysis tree by default, so you have to build it before you put it in.
We don't have three frames. The friend tree is created once.
Yes. The friend tree is created once with whatever variables you want to add, and then the training will do it again.
Okay. How we add the new variables?
Yeah, well, the new variables are even added. Yeah. Yes.
Now we do have to retrain it for auto resistance.
Yes. Okay.
So you got the exact same result. Did your variable range?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When you add the variable, the first parameter is the name of the variable, the second one is just the name that you give it, which just puts on the access label, and then you can give it unit, and then define what type it's input, so you can put integers or quotes. Once you've run that new training, you can open up the GUI again, and if you wrote it to a different root file, you can open up a GUI for both of your different trainings. So I opened up one.
What would the actual generated signal back down? 50,000 to 2 million?
50,000 signal and 2 million again, which is roughly, basically the difference between the two.
So you can just put those numbers in the coefficient too.
Well, no, because those, you're looking at the efficiency after the efficiency for the tracking function that applies. So it's only the efficiency on the combinations which make it into your key tree.
I see. But aren't you setting the scale by putting in that number in the...
Yeah, but it's
just the little dialog box you type in
the numbers. Yeah, but it's the scale for the tree doesn't know how many events were generated. It only knows how many combinations it has. And its efficiency only depends on, or its purity and efficiency only depends on the number of combinations that come in from the key tree. So the fraction of your signal events that survive your tractor construction cuts and your D-reaction selection is not the same for the signal in the background.
Right.
Okay. Right. So, if you want, you can open up a GUI for both of the trainings that you did, and you can look at the difference. So if I take a look at the train sample for when I included this neutron missing mass, the signal has this nice bump, or it's supposed to, in the background, large, going over here. And I guess I didn't say it before, but these are all unit normalized, so the area under the curves for both are the same. So obviously, if you're looking at real normalizations, the spread needs to be way up off the scale somewhere. Right, so once you put that in, you can do things like look at the output distributions. When I include this new missing mass variable compared to before, so you see that the shape slightly changed. Maybe if you're drawing a cut at 10%, or 0.1 here, do that again at 0.1, you'd have a smaller fraction of background fitting into here. Signal region there. But to really sort of look at the difference, you need to look at the efficiency and the purity plots that we looked at before. And look at that. I get that excellent.
Okay.
So we won't go through the details of how you're just actually looking at those curves again for the different things, but adding this new variable does have some extra discriminating power that builds on what you had before. So in general, if you find any new variable that has some new discriminating power that's uncorrelated with what you had previously, then you just throw it in the boost decision tree and you improve on your selection. I guess the other thing we look at is the ranking. So if you save the log file to this new, which includes the missing mask, find this ranking with the variables again, and see where it fits on the hierarchy there. Things got shifted around a little bit, so figure merit for the kinematic fit moved down. It's basically just because these extra, you add in a new variable, if it's correlated somehow with one of the other variables, then its performance then gets enhanced as well. So they're sort of all intertwined. So by adding one, you don't just insert a new ranking variable in the ranking order, you can move other variables around. It depends on how many times they're used in splitting and where, and what the weight of each of the trees was that it would use the splitting for. I don't think the magnitude actually matters, but just the relative order. It's telling you something about how each of the variables contributes to the
selection.
No, it's sort of a qualitative distance check. If I looked at this and I put in, run number as one of my variables for the input, and it showed up third rank variable, that would be kind of crazy, right? So you want to check to make sure the things that you think, and maybe you learned something, so maybe you put in a new variable you think has really no discriminating power, but it wants to have a high rank. Maybe it has some strange correlation you haven't considered before, so you can kind of learn something about your selection process. Okay, so that's, I think, all I had to say on the training. Let me go back to the slides. Okay, that's about it. The last thing before I go on to the next talk is just all this data is on the UConn SRM. So all the 50 samples that I generated for this and the signal samples and the analysis key trees that we're using to do this BDT training are available on the UConn SRM. You need a grid certificate to access those, and if you do get a grid certificate, it's very useful because you can access much larger background samples to do other studies of more rare processes. And that was from the data challenge and one of the future data challenges, which I'm assuming you have there as well. So it's something to think about doing. There's a nice link here to Richard's page, which has descriptions of how you can use the grid and grab these files. So it's, in terms of future analyses, it's probably a good idea to get started on something like that. Okay, so we'll
just one question. On the discriminating variable, does it seem like it's arbitrary, or it looks like it's going like minus 1 to 1, but not exactly?
Right. So, you get the... It doesn't have to be, it shouldn't necessarily be peaking at minus 1 and 1 for signal background. So for each of the training, for each of the events as it goes through each tree, it gets a plus or minus 1. And depending on what the weight is for that tree, you average those out, basically. So the absolute magnitude of that is not really important, but where the signal background overlaps and where you can make a cut to actually select your signal. So if you look at a lot of these, a lot of the different variables, they'll have different magnitudes for the classifier. But what the actual magnitude of the neural network classifier and the VEP classifier are pretty much, the absolute magnitudes are unrelated. But where they overlap between the signal and background should be, you know, roughly the same. But,
it's kind of arbitrary.
The field is arbitrary, yeah. All right, so we'll go on to the next set of slides. This will be the beginning of this session, which is how you actually, so we've done the training, we've tested on a test sample, but now we want to actually apply this to some other sample of data that we don't know what it is, you know, a priori. So that's data. So we know that if we look at a sample of Monte Carlo, we can get the test sample and the training sample to be roughly the same, and so we want to apply it, what we've learned to our data. The way we do this is instead of the factory that we had for the training, we now have a class called the reader, and the setup is very similar to what we had for the training. So again, you initialize the thing, you add the variables that you used previously, and it's important, you have to add the variables in the same order, and they have to be, you have to have all the variables that you used in the factory. So if you change or if you add a variable to the training, and you don't add that variable to the reader, it will, say fault or send you a message like you don't have the right number of variables here because it doesn't know what to do with the decision tree if it's missing one of the variables that you used in the training. Again, you have this book multivariate method. So obviously you book the one that you trained previously, and the information from the training are stored in these weight files. So if you look in the directory that you were looking in before, that you were working in before, you should have a weight file that has some string and has a weight in an XML format. And this file basically contains the information about the 100 decision trees that you trained, and this is how you pass a new event through that decision tree process for all 100 trees and then get out a new the classifier variable for that, the output for that event. So this is a sort of toy example from the root tutorial, again stripping out all the details, and just the basic, in a simple macro, you can just loop over the events from your tree, you get the entry, and if you have some variables which you had to compute in here when you added them to your factory, you have to actually come down here and physically compute them inside your event loop. And then this reader just has the function evaluate multivariate analysis method, and then you give it the string for the method you used in your training. And this reader, evaluate MVA, is this classifier value, this BET response, for that new signal event. That new event that you don't know whether it's signal or background. And so you can fill a histogram from that, and that will give you essentially this histogram for some new class of unknown events. And then you can put a cut on that set of unknown events and have some confidence that if you're you know what the signal and sufficiency was in an ideal case from your decision tree training. So this is just a quick example of how that works. For the N, for our example of this N3 Pi reader, you can implement this TMVA reader class basically anywhere you want. So you can do this inside of a key selector. You can write a separate macro to do this. And principally, you could put it inside some piece of the GluX stack if you wanted to, as long as you had access to the weight files from the training you had previously. And so for this case, I've added this TMVA reader into the key selector that we had before, And so you can just actually, for a new sample of events, or in this case, we're looking at the same sample events, but you can run them through your tree selector using the TMDA reader class, and then get the decision tree classifier variable from that. The nice thing about using the same tree selectors we had before is all the combined variables, things like the neutron measured missing mass and all that, are already computed there. You don't have to remake those. You just use them like we did when we built the fringe tree. And we can use this, we apply it, we can get our BDT classifier or the response value for the decision tree. And we can do a couple things. You can just fill histograms. You can just put a cut on the BDT at some value. You can fill histogram for the invariant mass of the signal or the background after the cut. But you can also write out a T-tree after you apply some cut on the classifier. And so that's what we'll do for the output that will eventually be going to AmpTools, and that'll be using to do this fit. And so you can write this out to another key tree, which just contains the variables you need for a partial wave analysis, for example. So the exercise here, the first one, is to, you can go to this session 7A directory, and we'll want to process the same data with the TMDA reader inside the tree selector. And create this sort of example histogram of what the mass distribution should look like. So if you put a cut at 0.1 for this BDT response value, where we had something like 90% purity, this is the distribution you get, where the black is the sum of the signal and background, and the blue is the signal, and the red is just the leftover background at the bottom. So we can go ahead and make this plot for putting cut on the BDT value, and then you can try some set of simple cuts to make some plots like this and just see how they compare if you do a simple cut analysis, cutting on the figure of merit for the confidence level of the kinematic fit and PID variables and things like that. Okay. So I started, I think, with a README file in this session 7A to follow. Right, and this is exercise 1. You can go to that directory as well.
fraction of the generated signal are we using in the exercise?
I generated 200,000 total. We're using 50,000. Yeah, so you want to use the same ones that were used in the training. Yeah, so if it's yelling at you, you have 16 variables instead of 15, then you need to either retrain without the missing mask or add the missing mask to your to the reader. Where I go is this process TMDA function where you're actually evaluating the BDT response. And the place where you want to fill it is where you grab, so you're just going to actually grab the BDT classifier value from TMDA reader that was initialized earlier in the T selector. And then you can make cuts on the BDT value, and you can fill this output tree. And you can fill histograms there as well. I added an extra if statement here for if you only wanted to make a cut on the kinematic fit confidence level of 1%, you could fill history in there and see what the values were. I tried adding a bunch of different possible high range of variables to the BEC to see what kind of performance I could get. I think the best I got was 30% efficiency for 75% purity or something. So we're talking about pretty significant gains being able to use this method. Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead and see if you can make this invariant mass plot, and if you want, try something with the with some set of cuts on the different variables and see what you get.
Second.
Here's the and then I took out the file.
Right.
here.
Yeah, but I mean, in that grand, what is the red curve?
The red curve is the background. Blue, black is total.
But what background of white?
Black. This is above and below your 0.1 VT cut, right? Is your signal back?
Yeah. Definition. So it's basically, if I put a cut right here, and I normalize this background to the yield that it really is, there's some number of events out here, and it's just the distribution of those in mass and the distribution of the signal in mass versus the environment in mass.
But I thought this was with the new, not with the train data.
Right, it's not with the train data.
Well, you know which one is signal and which one is
spectrum. Well,
I mean, you're treating it like you don't know what it is because you're not using the signal information. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's still Monte Carlo, so we know what it's tolerating.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is it correct what the reader think, I mean, after processing, separate the data into different files, signal and background?
No, it processes the Pythia event and the signal Monte Carlo event in two separate files because that's where they're saved. But in the end, you have to add the ones that pass the VDC cut from both of those together because that's really, the sum of those is really what you would have in the data. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to the next piece, which is once we write out, we can use this BDT cut to write out a root file, which is a clone of the analysis tree file, but only contains events which are above some BDT cut threshold. So for this case, I chose the events that were above this BDT classifier value of 0.1, So the root file that we write out contains everything in the histogram, so most of the signal that we have some background, but for amp tools, for doing the PWA fit, we don't really want this analysis tree, which, like I said, has this 90% purity after the VDT cut. We don't really want all the stuff in this analysis tree for amp tools. We don't care about, you know, the PID confidence levels at that point. So if you look at the analysis tree, your key browser looks something like this with all these variables for all the different particles you're looking for. What AMPTool wants is something very simple, four vectors for the final state particles, and then I guess some parameters for the beam momentum as well. So we need a way to convert this analysis tree into the AMPTool's format, which is just the four vectors, a subset of this information from the analysis tree. So Paul wrote a generic converter for this to convert an analysis tree to this AMP tools input format, and it uses the user info branch of the T-tree. So this contains the information about which particles you had in your combination and knows how to put those in the right order for the AMP tools format. So it grabs from this pi plus one form momentum, it puts that into the array of final state particle four momentum x, y, z, and energy, and it puts that in there for you. So the way it does that is this utility called tree to amp tools. And one important thing to recognize when you're looking at this is that the ordering of your particles that you specify when you write your e-reaction plugin is has to match the ordering that you specify in your AMP tools configuration file. So what I mean by that is if you look at the AMP tools generator in the fitter that Matt showed you the generator before, and we'll look at the fit, I guess, next, there was this line that had the reaction and the ordering of the particles that were generated. So you have the neutron, pi plus, pi minus, other pi plus. So this is the order of the particles that it will write in the array of final state four vectors. In the dereaction code, where you initialize your reaction setup, you have an ordering of your particles there as well. And so you want the ordering here to be the same as it is for AMP tools. So you have a neutron, pi plus, pi minus, pi plus. And if you have that ordering the same, then this tree to AMP tools utility knows how or can figure out how to put those in the proper order for antigens. So the thing you want to avoid is if you switch to Neutron and Pi Plus here, then what when AmpTools reads in your input file, it's going to think that the Neutron formalism is really the Pi Plus formalism, and so it just completely screws up the bit, which we found out when we did the CA video.
Yeah,
so,
fortunately, these mistakes are used.
Right. Yeah. True. But one way to check that is when you run this tree to AmpTools utility, it spits out an ordering for your particles coming from how you specified them in your dereaction code. And so just one thing to check when you're actually using this converter is that you get the same ordering from your input tree that you're making for AmpTools as is specified in your AmpTools bitter that you're going to be using. So something to be watchful of. So that's all I had for that, and there's just a quick exercise on how that actually works, just so you can do it once and know where the script is. So that's in the same session 7A, exercise 2. And there's a README file there. But the it's just a bash script which runs this this utility that Paul wrote. But the useful thing to see is that we want to combine the signal and background trees that we wrote in this when we applied the TMVA reader. So we wrote it's stored in this in the GLUIF data directory because I'm using a larger sample of events. So I ran 8 million total events for the background and 200,000 signal events. And so this is the sample of events for the background and the signal that satisfies B T cut greater than 0.1 for this full sample of events. And we want to combine those into one data file. So this is combining the signal and the background events for everything that we're defining as our signal with some B T cut requirement. And then we want to convert this, what we call our data file, to this AmpTools input tree format, which I think Matt will talk about next, is this when you input it to the FIT, it's this 3Pi data. And then we also have an acceptance root file, which is this when we generated with the AmpTools generator, you generate this sort of flat distribution in base space, so the n-flat and invariant mass, and you want to process this through all the same reconstruction and efficiencies that you do for the data, so you can fold those acceptance corrections into the CWA. And so that's just converting this acceptance signal, which is the base space generated Monte Carlo, signal Monte Carlo, and that'll be used in the FIT as well. So there's a README file there. It's really just one line running a script, but just so you can see what the output looks like. Let's try that.
Rapido sort of zoned out. Where does the acceptance file data come from?
So it was Matt talked about it yesterday morning. When you generate the N3Pi signal Monte Carlo, you generate it once with the physics amplitudes that you're interested in. And you generate it again with the with just phase space. And so we haven't worked with this acceptance file at all during this entire process. But I ran it over a large sample of events just so you could have it for the FIT. And so it's stored in this data directory. But yeah, you haven't actually processed that file yet.
But running that
yeah, well, it lives in the GLUEX data directory, which is on your virtual machine. So it was pre-generated for you. since I'm already close to the end of my time, I didn't have much to say about other multivariate classifiers, but I thought since Mike mentioned it briefly, I'd just talk a little bit about how you might do it or include this in CMDA. So I guess the first thing to point out is there's lots of possibilities for what you might use as your classifier. So there's all these neural networks, support vector machines, these likelihood methods, linear discriminants, all kinds of things. Like I said, this user guide from TMBA is really useful. It has nice descriptions of a lot of this stuff and references to where you might learn more about them. It's in Chapter 8. They have this sort of layout of a table for similar to what Mike showed, the comparison between BETs and neural networks. So talking about the advantages of one method versus another. In the case of BETs and neural networks, like this multilayer perceptron, they're similar in a lot of areas, but in terms of speed for training, they might be different. Their robustness to overtraining might be different. You can look at these and try out a few of them. And just to point out, as Eldon mentioned earlier, if you train a bunch of these different methods, I have just picked a few for this toy sample from the TMBA tutorial, depending on the method, you get a different shapes of these distributions. So this is all the same, looking at the same data. And so the scale of these is really not so useful. This guy might look like things are spread out a little bit more, but if you really were putting a cut, the cut half, split it here to get mostly signal and remove a lot of the background, you might get the same performance if you made a cut here. So even though they look different, their rock curves are all pretty similar, which is just telling you the performance is about the same. So it's useful just to take a look at some of these and maybe try a few. I think we probably don't have time to really spend time working on that here. But just to say what you can do as an exercise, just go pick a new method and add it to the train entry pi TMBA. You can just simple line for a factory, book method, and then just whatever else you want. So you can add a linear discriminant, a multilayer perceptron, and just try a few and see what they do. It's useful. I haven't spent a lot of time doing this, but I found it useful to look at the TMBA user guide and just see what their recommendations are for the different options and parameters you can put in for these different methods. And, it might be one of them for this method turns out to, perform a little better than the BET, and so we could look at different things. So just some warnings, these methods, a lot of them are slower in the training, and some of them could be more sensitive to input variables. But like Mike said, it really, you have to kind of set some of these parameters right or to get the performance to be roughly the same for most of them. And just to point out that this TMBA classification macro that's sort of standard, it's one of the standard tutorials in Root, implements essentially all of the possible methods you might use and runs it on this very simple toy simulation. And so you can just try this for many different different possibilities and get a rock curve for all these different things and just to try out a few of the different things. So, I don't think we have time for an exercise for that, but that's sort of something to try out when you have time.
Justin, so what was the final signal efficiency and purity that we've been getting for this full analysis?
The final, if I put a cut at this 1% BDT classifier value, I get a signal purity of 90% and the total efficiency, including tracker construction and everything, of about 25%.
So that's what we'll be going in with the answer section.
Yeah, so that's what we'll be using the fit for the answer section. In principle, you can put a cut anywhere you want on the BDT classifier and select 95% purity or higher, but your efficiency starts dropping unless you have more discriminating power from adding more variables.
And one of the reasons why he was able to get it so high was he didn't put a cut on the kinematic fit confidence level. He just let Boost's decision tree figure out where that is. So when you do your analysis and Danos these cut actions, you might put things like extremely loose, like
way far away from your mass peak, you know it just has no chance of passing anyway. But you would just let the boost decision tree, for the most part, handle anything tighter than that, because it's going to do a better job of selecting your signal than you will.
Yeah, one of the things I didn't mention was that you, when you can add these cuts before you actually do the training, I found that for a few of the variables, like the number of fit points on the track, if I actually added a cut to remove some poor quality tracks before I did the training, I could improve the training performance relative to actually just leaving those in and training on that variable itself. So there is some optimization of if you can remove things that are clearly nonsense combinations before you do the training, you can improve some of your performance. So it's sort of a trade-off with how much you want to. If you have some clean things that you can use to get rid of things that are obviously junk before you do the training, that can still be a useful cut.
But yeah, even the 1% cut on the confidence level of kinematic fit or particle ID, you're better off leaving that to the boost decision tree, I think.
Yeah, you don't want to make, you try not to make cuts that, you know, throw away half of your efficiency before you go to the BDT, because that sort of defeats the purpose.
Right, because as you saw in those, when you histogram the input variables, the signal, even the signal that had a decent amount of signal, like 1%, because things aren't purely Gaussian.
So did you make a kinematic fit confidence level cut before you went into the BDT, or did you just take everything?
I took everything. The only cut was on the number of fit points on the track.
Well,
okay.
It required convergence of the fit.
That's right. I didn't require the fit converge, so that
okay.
The confidence level was greater than zero. But
okay.
Other than that.
You cut, you're doing an and. Decision A and B and C. One way to look at a decision tree is an or command. So if one property, there's the confidence level from kinematic fit, is very poor, you have the ability to, in a cut, you would reject it because you have to have an and. But in a decision tree, you can imagine recovering that event, which you think you would have lost, because some other properties are such that that could only be six. But imagine if you have two properties, and one of them is really that it's bad. The other one is so good that you never see the background event of that test. Why would you do that event to them? It has to be fixed. It's just one of the 1% of people that happens. It's just before. If you have enough conditions, you can take it like four. You have the ability to bring an event back from your thing thrown away because all of the other properties are good. In a way that you can back on you. All right.
You
can imagine, and we've done it, so
the
one thing you can do here as well is if you spend enough time, you can take a decision tree, as long as it has two enough dimensions, and you each have a reverse engineering. Right? You can say, let it learn whatever it wants, and you can try to figure out what did it learn, and you could, depending on how many variables you have, you might be able to figure out most of it. You might be like, oh, right, so this thing is, if the confidence level is less than 0.01, it's only keeping it if
X, Y, and Z are true, so they're right to write that cut. Like all of this, you can use that when you have three. If this is 300, this is 300, then it can be possible to have to pass on that all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like...
Well, but then, well, if you go to all of them, right, then you don't gain anything. Doing that. Just...
Yeah.
You could, you know, try and... You can try and read some of them if you have a limited number.
Mm-hmm.
Or write an algorithm that tries to go and tell you the most common ones. Yeah, or the very first. People do these things, try to reverse engineer sometimes to figure out what they call it. So the simple picture, you can think of it like, imagine you're doing an or instead of an and.
All right. Thank you, Johnson. Now that we've got some great signal purity in the next sessions, which are after the coffee break, Matt will show us how to do the actual analysis. So come back at 3:10.
I'll show you the
temperature.
You were able to do it. Okay, here.
Yeah. recording. Mark, do you want me to stop the meeting and start the end of the next session?
Some of like alpha ti or
Like, you have 1,000 trees at the end, each with different weights or different cut levels. And so...
It shouldn't be a random number. For every event, you evaluate for each tree.
Oh.
If that was a 1 or a minus 1 or a plus 1.
Okay.
And then you have a sum of 200 trees, you have 200
numbers,
which is
all the alpha.
Plus or minus alpha. And you add them up, right? Some number. So the only way you can get minus 1 is if that event is always in a back nothing. Plus 1 is always in a
different
way. Then you end up somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
So when you choose these things, you see, like, the certain training that you end up with events that are really all the way out.
Yeah,
that's because
it's every single tree.
Yeah, because those, that particular situation. And then, of course, whether it happens depends a lot on what the data looks like, how different the outcome can be. Or there are types of single events that never look like some type of background. You know, if so, then they can end up over. There's a certain type of background that you can imagine, and they never get to see it, right? They're always identified by
Naomi. Yeah, sure.
So they might have seen it.
Yeah.
Is your video working today?
Yeah, Curtis fixed it yesterday, actually. There was one really obscure setting in a web page, instructions that had been messed with. So, yeah, it's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Curious. No individual weight.
There's no reason one tree would be weighted more.
Yeah.
They're just training them individually about their independent use.
Okay.
Each tree is different equivalent.
Yeah. Not too long ago, Brian.
Thank you. Please stand by.